Welcome to InstaDeath Survivor Support Group, a podcast all about game books and the readers and writers who adore them.
Everything comes full circle. Today on the show, I have our first ever guest, and now joining us again after the season finale, Stuart Lloyd, or Lloyd of Game Books. Stuart came on at the beginning of the series to just give us an overview of the game book landscape and sort of the history of how we got to where we are today. And today, Stuart's joining us again to give us a bit of an update of things that have been happening recently in game books. So, listening audience, please welcome Stuart Lloyd.
Oh. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Wow. That was great. I'm surprised you managed to fit a whole studio audience in your living room. That's great.
Yeah, we're actually coming to you live from my bedroom today because with the time change, today's daylight, edition of daylight savings is. And so my kids are sort of out of sorts this morning. So I had to go to a different spot.
Yeah, it's confusing because I think our clocks went back at the end of October and you're in Canada. I think they go back today, don't they?
They went back today. I'm actually in the U.S. down in the state of Virginia. And you know what's funny is I think the last time I talked to you wasn't long after the time change last year, because I believe you're the guest with the dubious honor of me messing up the time twice.
It's like an annual tradition now, isn't it?
It is indeed. So before we get into the news, how have you been? It's been a wild ride the last year.
Yeah, it has. That's a way of putting it. It's been busy. I've had lots of people wanting tutoring, which is what I do. But basically for my sanity, I decided I should restart my blog again and do something I enjoy because... Well, I think for a lot of people, lockdown and everything made us question what we were doing with our lives and what we were doing with the time we had. So while teaching does fulfill me, I want to do game books as well. So that's what I did. I started blogging again and writing game books again. So that was my year. There was lots of work, but then I made time for myself. How about you?
Oh, man. Yeah, it's been wild. In the last year, I changed jobs. I moved house. My kids have grown quite a bit. The house that we moved into, we thought, this is move-in ready. We're not going to do any projects, but here we are doing some projects. It's been a good year. Last year, around this time, maybe a month before, maybe in October or something, is when I first discovered game books. And through the process of getting involved in game books, I've also discovered now RPGs and solo RPGs and narrative RPGs. That's a cool world as well. So my gaming life has broadened and expanded. And I know that actually on the topic of RPGs, you have some cool personal news that I'm sure we'll get to. So why don't we do it? Why don't we get down to the news?
Good. It's like a proper newsroom in here now.
Yeah, exactly. What's first? What's a juicy tidbit to kick us off?
Okay. So I think I'll start with Fighting Fantasy, a Kickstarter for the Rebel Planet graphic novel by Mark Lane, who did Destiny's Role and various other game books. And that funded, which is great. So that's going to be on its way. So there we go. That's Fighting Fantasy.
I'm excited about that.
It's considered by a lot of people to be one of the best sci-fi fighting fantasies.
Yeah.
Which I hasten to add is actually makes it very good as well, because people have a bit of a downer on sci-fi fighting fantasies, but it is actually a good fighting fantasy book as well. Because when people think of sci-fi fighting fantasies, they might think of Skylord or something and like, no. But no, this is actually a good fighting fantasy book and teaches you binary. I really hope there's more binary lessons in it from a science geek point of view.
0011. I don't know.
Exactly. You said it all. Another big one is Lone Wolf. Lone Wolf is on its penultimate book at the moment, The Dusk of Eternal Night, which is huge. And it's the book where your Lone Wolf's sort of best Kai Lord and you're sort of like one ability away to getting to be the Grand Supreme Master, getting all the superpowers and sort of be having godlike levels like Lone Wolf. And it's pretty epic. I bought it and went through it, and that's awesome. And I can't wait for the last one to complete the saga. And then also, they've started re-releasing the first few books, the first three, as they want to make the definitive Lone Wolf series. So they want to make the Lone Wolf series with consistent sort of style. They've gone through several editions. Flight from the Dark, Fire on the Water, and the Caverns of Kalte are all out. Flight from the Dark is now 550 sections long, with extra material from August Hahn, Vincent Lazzari, and Joseon Bendiva. So there's a team finishing the books with his notes. But they're making the definitive editions.
That alone is exciting. I'm kind of a bad game book hobbyist, I guess. I don't own a single physical copy of the Lone Wolf books, despite really loving the series, and I've only played through the first six.
The thing is, it makes it so easy to not own a physical copy because it's all free online.
Project Aeon, exactly. That's where I've gotten my Lone Wolf fix. And you know, I love the first book so much. I have a background as a musician, and I actually wrote my own personal theme song for it. Maybe one day I'll release it or something. Get Jesse, the guy who's done the theme music for the show, to give me some backing tracks or something. But I really love the series and plan to continue it one day. But there's just so much out there. I wanna explore it all.
There is. Yeah. Well, the good thing is about Lone Wolf, you know, it's all there. Maybe when all the definitive editions are out, then you can get those.
Yeah, so if like me, you're getting into game books, projectaeon.org, I believe it is a great place to go and check it out. And then when you're really into it, you can go spend all your hard-earned cash on some of those definitive editions.
You spend your hard-earned cash on magnumon.com. They're currently going at £20 each. Wow, but they look gorgeous.
See people on eBay selling them at the same time for like £300 each.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
That's terrible. Yeah, don't do that. Go buy them officially. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, they do look gorgeous. If I become rich, then I will, and have a bigger house, I'll get a collection of them. But yeah. I'm like you. I only have a few Lone Wolf books. They were signed by Joe Diva, so I don't have a whole collection. I was quite lucky to have met him at one point.
But signed, I mean, that's something special right there. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we've covered two of the big heavy hitters, Fighting Fantasy and Lone Wolf. What else you got for us today, Stuart?
I've got some Choose Your Own Adventure news. That's another big one, because in researching the game book news for Azine, which we'll get to, it seems that Choose Your Own Adventure releases books twice a year. It's October and May Choose Your Own Adventure release their books. So there's quite a few new Choose Your Own Adventure books. The latest one is You're a Spy for Cleopatra. So that'll be interesting.
Wow.
She probably needed a few spies from what was going on there. So there's also Choose Your Own Adventure board book for tiny
what?
Ones.
How does that work? That's awesome.
Yeah, so what are they? Oh, there's Lost on the Amazon. Oh, they're very cute. The Lost Jewels of Nibuti and By Balloon to the Sahara. Sorry, there you go.
Titled so they're easy for your toddler to say. Delayed reaction from the crowd. On the kids' book side of things, you know, I haven't really explored that too deeply with my son yet, but he has really enjoyed Shelby, the little country mouse or something like that. It's by an Italian graphic artist or comic book artist or something like that. It's not Choose Your Own Adventure. I just bring it up because of the kids thing. So now I'm going to have to explore these Choose Your Own Adventure board books. That sounds awesome.
Oh, yeah. They're pretty good. My son, who's six, has recently got into the Beast Quest Choose Your Own Adventure books. There's three of them. sort of choose your path book. So, yeah, he was really into it and he was sort of working out the optimum path. So yeah, there's plenty out there for kids. If you, yeah. So yeah, if you want your children to get into them, there's some options from people who've got children. So there we go. So choose your own adventure is really sort of branching out in terms of different sort of genres.
Yeah, that's exciting. Yeah. I want to add, this is not news. This is actually old news, but they also have some board games. I haven't played them yet. I'm really excited to play them. And in fact, I guess a little bit of news on my front. We'll see if I hold up my promises. But I am planning to sort of expand the content of the show a bit to include more interactive fiction. And part of that is going to be board games that are very narratively focused. Those will probably be more on a YouTube channel than in the podcast for obvious reasons, because they're visual in nature. And choose your own adventure board games are on the docket. So assuming I can get permission from the publisher.
Oh, yes, I'm British. Yeah. Well, I hope so. It's like a free advert. So
yeah, exactly.
If it's good enough for Will Wheaton, it's good enough for us. So.
Yeah. I'm no Will Wheaton though.
Not yet.
Not yet. We'll see. All right. What do you have next for us, Stuart?
Right. So that's Choose Your Adventure. They've got a few other things like the Citadel of Whispers and other things. So they've got lots of series out. So keep an eye out for that. Then I thought I'd go through some people that have been guests on the show so you can keep up with them. So I got reminded about this on Facebook the other day, which is good because I've been subscribing to this. So Simon Brooks has been releasing game books on subscription. So he's been on Substack and he's released two game books so far. He's releasing monthly game books for the cost of, I think, $70 a year. So that's like $7 per game book, $7. And yeah.
What an ambitious project to take on. So Simon was a previous guest on the show and we did a read through of his book, Cult of the Pajoli. Had a really good time with that. It was kind of a dungeon crawl kind of feel. And he recently had a pretty successful Kickstarter for help me out here. It's like it was Cthulhu universe. I can't remember. Or at least Lovecraftian. Which I have not read yet.
Shadow Over Innsmouth.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I hadn't heard about this one though. So that's pretty cool. I'll have to take a peek into that world.
They're good. The first one is called The Watchtower, which is it's a fantasy version where you're trying to infiltrate a watchtower to help your army sort of march on, so the people in the watchtower don't notice you and send a signal. And the second one is called Vents, where you're the stowaway on a spaceship. So he's exploring different genres as well. He's going for a lot of variety. And the first one's 177 sections and the second one's 200. So they're not small. He's writing one of these a month.
That's amazing. Yeah. You know, there was this, I probably mentioned this on the show before, but there's a parable, I guess, you could call it. I don't know whether this actually exists, but this parable is, I call it the clay pots analogy or something, but it's about a teacher, who did a pottery class, and one year as an experiment, he divided the class and said, all right, this half of the class, I'm going to grade you on the quality of just one pot. So do whatever you need, but at the end of the day, turn in one pot and I'll grade you based on the quality of that. And then the other half of the class, he said, I'm going to grade you on the total weight of all the pots you create throughout your time in the class. So, you know, obviously like 1,000 pounds would grade more highly than 10, right? Or what's the UK weight scale?
Kilograms.
The metric there
system, yeah.
Kilograms. I should say kilograms. Yes. I'm sorry, I'm terrible. anyway, the result of this, in the story at least, was that he had some independent judges come in and pick the best pots. And it, the best pots all came from the group that was judged on weight. And so the moral is that if you do something a lot, you get really good at it, right? So I my prediction is that in a few years' time, if Simon Burks keeps this up, he'll be one of the best game book authors out there.
Yeah, will be. Like regular practice.
Yep.
That's what he's getting. So yeah, and he's committed to it now. People are giving him money, so he's gonna that's an incentive. It's
yep.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. That's on Substack. So if you get on down there, he's releasing lots of emails and things, so you can have a little taste of what he's doing before you pay. So so have a go at that. Yeah, brilliant. Yes, that's Simon Burks. So next it's another guest. So this is Victoria Hancox. So she is releasing a book. This is November we're recording. She's releasing a book in November. It's called Behind the Weeping Walls. And it's the fourth book in the Cluster of Echoes hexology. And at the time we're recording this, that's all she could tell us. Not because she's being secretive, but because she herself doesn't know when it's going to be released. I think it's out of her hands when it's going to be released.
Yeah.
But can it's coming in November.
Victoria Hancox's work is some of my favorite. It's genuinely creepy, but not necessarily gruesome, right? And it also has that element of, pardon my French, trigger warning, curse word coming in. It has an element of mindfuck, right, to it that is really enjoyable to me. And actually, I've been in discussion with her about featuring a playthrough of another one of her books. Actually, I haven't done a playthrough of one of her books on the show yet. A playthrough of one of her books that I think the audience would really enjoy. So,
It'd be great. Actually, I've recently got physical copies of a book through something we do in the UK for postage reasons. Is we use a website called Elfster and have a game book Secret Santa.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah. So, well, I guess you could set one up in the US as well, because there's still plenty of time. And so that was on my Secret Santa list.
Speaking of Santa, I am going to jump in with a little personal announcement, personal news announcement. So, yeah, we're going to be doing a Christmas special featuring 'Twas the Krampus Night Before Christmas by Jonathan Green. I'm trying to pull his leg to do a little sort of introduction to the book. And he's been kind enough to share a copy of the book and the RPG that goes along with it. I'm going to be recording this week for the game book. So
it'll be great. Yes. Excellent. Oh, that sounds awesome. Yeah, actually, speaking of Jonathan Green, we can just talk about him. This is his Ace game book series, where he sort of takes public domain works and turns them into game books with twists. He's like a juggernaut. It just keeps going.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember which his latest one. He's released a Dracula one recently. And I think the latest Kickstarter was Ronin 47,
yep,
which is based on the 47 Ronin. But it's also got Mecha, and it's a Mecha versus Kaiju version. Kaiju?
We play a game at my house that we call Kaiju Baby. Of course, my youngest is getting a little old for Kaiju Baby, but so my son builds an elaborate structure, and then my youngest son knocks it down without asking if he can, and my oldest son cries, and then I try to make it fun by saying, "Oh, he's a Kaiju Baby," and he looks at me like, "What the heck are you talking about?" Anyway.
Awesome. All babies get to be Kaiju babies at some point. I remember with my daughter when she was a baby, just constantly building up blocks, and then she just knocked them down.
The topic of Jonathan Green and Ace game books. So if you're not familiar with Jonathan Green, he's actually written in the Fighting Fantasy series. He has written about fighting fantasy. I think he has actually two books on sort of history and background of fighting fantasy as well. Yeah. And he has, as you said, eight or nine Ace Game books, which tend to do a twist on like a classic tale of some kind. And I'm hoping to do a sort of second season playthrough and interview with him as well. So not for the Christmas special, because I'm trying to get that done quickly. But for season two, I want to do a playthrough. Perhaps it'll be Ronin. Perhaps it'll be Dracula. Not sure yet. Really looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm loving the Ace Game books at the moment. They're ace. So.
I should have done the laugh, but it feels a little awkward. Here, I'm going to do it anyway. That's not at all the same laugh that you heard earlier, folks. That's a legitimate studio audience.
Exactly. Yeah, they're good. It's good. Yeah.
I should have done this one, Stuart.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. All right. What's next?
Right. Oh, next. So, James Shanep, another guest of yours, he's released Infected as an audiobook.
Yeah, how cool is that?
I know.
There's a couple of authors who have been doing audiobooks. Are you going to cover any of the other audiobooks that have been happening? Or
I haven't actually. I haven't heard about the others. I once there was a podcast ages ago, which was about 4 hours long, where they took a choose your own adventure and what do they timestamped it and things.
That's awesome. The original iteration of the ideas for this show, I wanted every episode to start with a entry for like a game book. And I just couldn't pull off the logistics of making that happen, but maybe for a future season, probably not season two. I guess I'm racking my brain. Now I don't know if those authors told me that off the record or not. So maybe I won't name the other authors right now, but there does seem to be a trend of game book audiobooks coming out.
I'm excited because most of my books are audiobooks. Most of the books I like non-game books. So yeah.
Same here, especially like I've mentioned a few times on the podcast that I'm a big fan of Brandon Sanderson's work. I don't think I've never actually read a word of Brandon Sanderson's work, but his books on audio are over 50 hours. So it's like, I'm a slow reader, to be honest. I can't imagine how long it would take me to read. Anyway.
So yeah. I just don't have the time to sit down and read most of the time. So yeah. So audiobooks are great.
So what do we have next?
So is another guest. So all your previous guests have been very busy. Mm-hmm. Samuel Isaacson has released two books, either late October or early November. One of them is called The Bradfell Conspiracy, where you try and solve a murder in an amusing yet annoying city without losing their life, without you losing your life. And then the other one is aimed more at children, called You're a Wizard. With the apostrophe in the right place, which is good because it's always good to teach children the importance of correct apostrophe use. This is for children aged 6 to 10 and it's 100 sections. So yeah, that's exciting. It seems like children are getting more game books as well, which is good.
I haven't read either of these yet. I loved the Portsrood Forest book. So the Bradfell Conspiracy is something I'm really excited about. And You're a Wizard may end up in my son's stocking. It might not fit in a stocking, but you know, you get the idea.
Yeah. I think I'll get some for my son because he really loved the Beast Quest books and he liked pulling them apart as well, sort of working out how many endings there were and various. I don't know where he gets that from.
I thought you meant literally pulling it apart. My greatest fear giving my son game books is that he will literally tear them up, which would just make me so sad inside.
I know.
But Speaking of game book guests, that have been busy, David Lowry, I'll mention him too. So this isn't maybe recent news, but he, since last time we spoke to him, he has released at least two game books. And so those were, let's see, he finished the Shadow Thief series. And he also has, he's been teasing Devil's something. Oh gosh, what is it called? I might need to edit this out because I'm just stumbling.
Yes. I'm just looking at his Drive Through RPG page. It's Straight to Hell.
Yeah.
Oh, it says Psycho Killer Audio Products.
Oh, there you go. So there's one of them that I was referring to. Okay. I didn't know that it had actually been released. So that's cool. But anyway, where I was going with this is Varney, Varney the Vampire. Not a game book, but a children's fiction. And he's had a really awesome sort of series of comic panels, I guess you could say, too, that have just been sort of his social promotion. They've been a lot of fun.
Oh, yes.
So check out Black Dog Game Books, David Lowry, if you're interested in Varney the Vampire. He's the reason I'm mentioning it now is he either has released or is about to release Varney 2. So that's pretty recent news, actually.
Yes, I see them on Facebook, his Varney sort of comic strips. So yeah, they're very good. They're very good. So yeah, excellent. That's David Lowry. I think I've done everything based from your guests now.
Yeah,
I went through your
Mel.
Oh, actually, no, I haven't. I haven't actually.
Okay, go ahead.
So based on your last, sort of Fabled Lands publishing, this is Fabled Lands related.
Yep.
So the computer RPG is going to include Golmir soon.
That's exciting. You know, I've been trying and failing to do streams, playing through the Prime Games version of this, which is the computer game. Apparently my internet, while supposed to be good enough, isn't cutting it. Yeah, it's a cool adaptation of the book. I've been trying, or the books, I should say, with Golnir being added. And Golnir is actually, I think, my favorite of the series. I don't know how many people feel that way, but for me, I really like the second book.
It is. It's got like a lot of high fantasy stuff. It's got the there's a castle where if you kill the ruler, then you get one of the permanent deaths in the book, which is. So don't do that. But there's lots of other crazy things. Doesn't it introduce the sort of fae folk, and you could get trapped there if you don't get any fae money?
I don't know if I've ever hit on that story thread, but I did get lost in the forest. I forget what that forest is called. And pretty much almost died. I did die because I think I lost everything I had. I probably died there. I've done so many Fabled Lands campaigns that I can't even remember what I've done. And there's still so much to explore. So speaking of Jamie Thompson, who was our finale guest, I think you were probably flattered to be mentioned a couple times on that show.
Oh, I was. Yeah. It was awesome. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah, Jamie's quite a character. It doesn't, you know, you could almost guess it from his writing. But I wasn't quite prepared for his energy. Maybe this would be a good spot. Speaking of guests and announcements that guests have, Stuart, you were a guest. So I think you have a couple of announcements. So why don't we get to your first personal announcement?
Okay. Well, my first personal announcement is that I finished Scrawl.
Yes.
Yes.
And I remember when you were on, we'll let you tell the audience some about this, but last time when you were on, you were like, I'm not going to make any promises, but I'm going to try to get it done soon. And I'm excited about it. So it's available on Drive-Thru RPG. But why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
It's pay what you want. So basically it's procedurally generated. So you can do a hex crawl, but the world is procedurally generated as you explore it. So you start on a hex with a certain terrain, and then as you move to another terrain, you work out what terrain that is based on the terrain you came from. The land is sort of scattered with dungeons and civilization and various other things, and you can just explore, which is great. I came up with the concept ages ago. It was basically, it was like, what if I could do Fabled Lands, but sort of make it up as I went along. And so, yeah, you can just explore forever and ever and ever, which is great. The idea was that I would make some adventures and you could insert them as you go. So, I did it with the old edition. So there were things like, there's a dungeon full of ants. And so if you go to a certain terrain, you can go to a dungeon full of ants. And it's finished. I think in the summer holiday, I just went, right, I've just got to finish this, and just sat down and spent all my free time doing it until it was done. Cool. So yeah, I'm really excited about it. I've been playing it myself, playtesting it, and I haven't felt the need to change anything. And there's loads of variety. I use normally D36 tables, so there's lots of stuff to go through. And I can't remember how many terrains there are now. There's about 15 different terrains. I just kept on adding them. And each terrain's got its own special dungeon. And what else is there? There's deities. Oh, go on.
I was just going to say, like, I haven't had a chance to play through it yet. I've been reading through. I think it'd be fun sometime to have you kind of walk me through on air a game of Skrull. So we should plan that. But so it's kind of a solo RPG, it's got dungeon crawl elements, overland elements, things like that. So, and you said there's deities. Anything else you want to tell us about Skrull?
I'm glad it's finished. Yeah. It was a good idea. And then I think there's this concept in technology called the valley of death. And I think I basically went through my own personal valley of death where, you know, you've got to push your way out, otherwise you're never going to do it. And I basically just looked at what I'd done and thought, I really can't go back. I really can't stop now. So I pushed through.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I've done it and that it works. It's way more complicated than what I expected it to be. but it is what it is. I don't think I had any control over it towards the end. I think it took on a life of its own and just made me finish it. And then, yeah.
I think if that makes sense. You're on to something, right? If it's pulling you along rather than you having to push it up the hill. So that's cool. And then you've got another announcement. So let's...
Oh, yes. I'm running a game book competition. Yay!
Then what's that called?
It's called the Lindenbaum Game Book Competition, for short, Game Book Fiction. So it's for game books that are 100 sections long and 25,000 words maximum. So you can do shorter ones, obviously. The entries open on December the 1st and they close on February the 1st at midnight UK time. And and anyone's welcome to enter. So the email is... lindenbaumprize@gmail.com. I'll double check that, but yes. I mean, the page with all the rules is on my blog. Shall I talk about why I'm doing this?
Absolutely. But first, let's give that blog URL. So it's lloydofgamebooks.com, is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Lloyd of Gamebooks.
I'm going to repeat this. LLOYD of gamebooks.com. And you can find entry instructions there. I think this fills a really important space in game books because kind of some bummer news that I think we were probably going to cover is that the game book scene, which has made it through, I think, three editions? Yes.
Yeah.
Is on an indefinite pause right now. You know, these sorts of labor of love projects, they take a lot of effort and often don't mean much in the way of like monetary reward. And that had one awesome thing that did was it gave a space for sort of experimental entries of game books and that kind of thing. So now we have the Lindenbaum competition running now by Stuart that can fill that hole for now. So yeah, Tell us a little bit about why you're doing this.
Well, it's actually almost a copy of an older game book competition called the Windhammer competition, which was hosted on a website called the Chronicles of Arborel. And the person who hosted that was called Wayne Densley. And he has written lots of game books in the world of Arborel for free, which you can still go and go to and look at. And he decided to run the Windhammer competition, and it ran from 2008 to 2015. And if you look through all the entries, you will see a lot of people, a lot of names that have gone on to make published game books, like David Walters, who made, he wrote The Way of the Tiger Book 7 and Way of the Tiger Book 0, the prequel, which was great because David Walters writes a lot of sort of Japanese folklore type novels and game books. Other people like Ashton Saylor, who wrote The Good, the Bad, and the Undead, which was a Fabled Lands kind of project, but he took it up. And then, yeah, there's lots of other people who've sort of gone on to bigger and better things, who started out on the, on the Windhammer Prize. There's a few of the people, person who wrote Fabled Lands 7, his name is
Paul Gresty.
Paul Gresty, yes, he entered into the Windhammer Prize as well. So, and then there's someone called Andrew Drake, I think that's how you pronounce his name. He wrote for Tin Man Games and did a lot of work for Tin Man Games as well. And then someone called Andrew Wright, who's now writing a lot of advanced fighting fantasy materials. And then towards in the last year, there was a lot of people in the interactive fiction scene getting involved. So there's someone called Felicity Banks, who's written lots of interactive fiction and novels, and she wrote something in the last year as well. And also the Tammy Badowski. And they're just a few people awesome. Who have gone on to make sort of bigger and better things in the game book scene. So it was a really big thing in sort of the late 2000s and the early 2010s when sort of there wasn't that much. There was Tin Man Games just started. There were a few people blogging with their playthroughs of game books. And yeah, Windhammer was a great place where people could not only write a game book, they could also find out who the other game book people were and get in contact with them and everything. And it sort of, well, that's what motivated me to start my blog, because my first game book was pretty awful for the Windhammer Prize. And so I thought, I'm just going to sit down and start blogging and sort of analyze this and why it's going wrong and how I'm going to make it better. And so eventually it worked, because I did win the prize in 2010, but 2011.
Nice.
But yeah. So there we go. So it was a big thing. But fast forward to this August, when we had International Game Book Day and there was a sort of Sunday evening sort of get together, and I mentioned it to all these game book fans, and almost none of them had heard of it.
Wow. I know.
And I was like, wow, this is such a big thing. So I thought, I need to do this. I need to, we need to have another way for people to sort of enter their game books. Wayne Densley stopped it because he came to the impression that self-publishing and Kickstarter made it easier for people to get their game books out there, which is true, because a lot of people have just self-published game books and done great. Mm-hmm. But I think there's still more space for just the shorter game books, or someone to get a small first step. I expect starting a Kickstarter, going straight from nothing to self-publishing and Kickstarter, is a pretty big step.
Absolutely. I think writing a game book is a huge undertaking in and of itself. And then running a successful Kickstarter is like a whole other level of complexity, right? So
yeah,
I think having these sorts of, you know, game jams, game book competitions, things like that are really cool sort of outlet for people to get involved. Really exciting stuff.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see what people put in there. And you know, my challenge to established game book authors is like, here's an opportunity for you to do something off the wall that you would never put a full book or put into a full book, right? Like,
yeah.
So I'd love to see some of the established, you know, even self-published game book authors just kind of get in there and do something a little wacky, you know?
Yeah.
I guess shout out to Sam Isaacson. He's doing wacky stuff, even in his game books. But yeah, I'd love to see some people get into that spirit. So,
yeah, it's great. Yeah, it'd be good because, one of the things I loved about it was the feedback as well. Because afterwards, people are free to send feedback, and it was always great to read that. It was a bit like a second Christmas, basically. Absolutely. The day after the Windhammer results were announced for me. So
yeah. One day I'd love to see like a game books, or maybe more broadly interactive fiction, award show or something like that. You know, even like in board games, there's a number of these, I follow the Dice Tower podcast for board games, and then they have the Dice Tower Awards, and, you know, it's a casual thing. It's not like the Emmys or something like that, but, yeah, it would be cool to sort of slice and dice and the space and spotlight the exemplary titles. I don't know if we're quite there in terms of the number and breadth of releases right now, but I'm optimistic that the space is growing. So,
yeah, definitely. Yeah, it'd be great. It'd be great to see it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's like, yes, I didn't realize how excited it made me. It's been 5 years, so
yeah,
I'm just yeah.
So when is it officially kicking off?
So officially December the 1st is when you can start entering, and then you've got till February, basically the end of January. So midnight on February the 1st. So if you want to start writing for when the entries are, then that's 2 whole months and it's 25,000 words max. So that's, I was working out what percentage of a NaNoWriMo it is. Cause I think a NaNoWriMo is like 60,000 words in a month.
Yeah.
But you've got twice the time and less than half the book. So
yeah,
it's like 21% of a NaNoWriMo. So yeah. My blog has links to things that, well, my blog has a link to the game book authoring tool, which has a free version for 100 sections. So if you're worried about the mechanics of randomizing your sections and making sure your links work, the game book authoring tool can do that for free for a 100 section game book, because when it was first started, the Windhammer prize was going, and the person who ran it decided to make a free version for people entering the Windhammer prize. So
yeah
don't let that get in the way. Okay,
of a good, that's of a good really idea. Cool. yeah awesome. Okay. Free idea of the day. This one just popped into my head. So one thing that I've been exploring is these like solo journaling RPGs. Things that come to mind are like, there's one called Journey, and I'm trying to think what's the most famous example of this. Oh, Thousand Year Old Vampire is okay. A popular example of that actually I've talked about on the show before. So here's a challenge for somebody out there who has better game design skills than I. I would love to see a journaling RPG that helps you make game books through prompts. That would be really cool. And then we could do a competition on that too. Like the best game book output for this. But anyway, yeah. Wild. I have these strange ideas sometimes, but I'm really excited about the Lindenbaum competition, and Scrawl is out there on DriveThruRPG. And, you know, I really appreciate you, Stuart, for coming back on the show. Studio audience, let's give it up for Stuart.
Thank you.
Well, I can't wait until you can come back on the show. There's always more news.
Yeah.
Wow, this is a long, long cheering.
Oh, man.
Silence, I said.
Yes.
Oh, wow. They just.
That's good.
Just
you got good control of them. You got good control of them. That's great. Can I say one more thing?
Absolutely.
With the zines. So you mentioned the game book zine is sort of stopping, which is very sad. So there was another zine called Fighting Fantazine, which had 16 issues. Actually, the 17th is coming out very soon.
Oh, it's excellent.
It's been Yeah, and speaking of how these labors of love take a while, it's been 4 years in the making.
Wow. Wow. I expect it to be 700 pages. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, that's really cool. Really cool.
Yeah.
I've never actually seen a fighting fantasy before. So like what kind of stuff has been in previous issues?
Well, there's been an adventure in each one, a sort of fighting fantasy based adventure, but they sort of expanded into other things. There's articles like Things I Learned from Fighting Fantasy, which is sort of a humorous article based on what you learn from a book, a certain fighting fantasy book. There's sort of one big issue was when we did a vote on the ranking all the best fighting fantasy game books, and people, the top 10 got a whole sort of article about them, cool. Which I remember because I wrote about Moonrunner, which is my favorite fighting fantasy game book. And then there was a competition for an advanced fighting fantasy scenario. So there's that. This 17th one has an interview with Dave Morris.
Okay.
And and it has other things like so Andrew Wright was a big writer for them. So he used to write monsters about monsters as well when he wasn't officially doing it, which he is now. So there's plenty of, and there was news. Which is what I did, which is a cut down version of the news because I didn't want to stick 4 years of news in. And then this issue has an article from me, which I had to reread because it was based on something I wrote about 7 years ago. It's based on a forum post that I built on. It's how you can make fighting fantasy books easier by here's having a spell list of spells that sort of help you. Like there's a spell that gives you a few gold pieces or an item that's asked for, or, you know, does 6 damage to a creature in combat. So
cool. So it's almost like, I wonder if you remember the Game Genie from, for NES that like had like cheat codes that you could apply or something like that.
I don't know, but it is basically like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, I like that. I love hacks of games. And this is something that's really popular in the RPG space, is like you'll have a game come out that introduces some interesting mechanics, and then you'll have 20 other games that come on its heel that like apply those mechanics to different themes, you know. But in this case, we're talking about like taking a game book and applying some structured ways to cheat, right? That make it easier. That's a really cool idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't claim. Yeah. I built on someone else's idea. This was back when Fighting Fantasy was, had a different forum that eventually got overrun with wedding dress adverts. I can't remember the name of the person who did it, but I've mentioned it in my article and I sort of built on it and I thought more people should know about it. So that's what I did. So yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, great.
Well, the illustrious and I got no other adjectives.
Tired.
that's probably an accurate one. Me too, man. It's 8:19 a.m. here. But the best part of waking up is Stuart Lord giving us the game book news.
Ooh, yeah. Oh, thanks. That's awesome.
All right. Thanks, Stuart. Have a good one. Right.
Thanks, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to support the show, become a patron at patreon.com/instadeath. A special thanks to our guests and to the contributors who helped make the show better than I ever could on my own. Intro music graciously provided by Jesse Johnson, aka Zenoda. Find more great music by searching Jesse Johnson or Zenoda, spelled with an X, on YouTube and most major streaming platforms. Podcast cover art generously contributed by Patrick O'Neill. You can learn more about Pat's art on his Facebook page, Pat O'Neill Art.